Welcome to our Tuesday edition of our Saturday simulcast, joined by Brian Newbert and Tom Deanhart as we break down Purdue and its NCAA tournament appearance as the Boilermakers take on Yale on Friday in Milwaukee. A lot to talk about after the draw and where the Boilermakers are as they head into the NCAA tournament. I want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel and the Boiler Up Bar, 811 Restaurant. We appreciate everybody that has from the Union Club that has supported us. We've enjoyed having our shows there this year, and we appreciate all that they've done for us. So we are in a situation where, Brian, Purdue is now do or die time, and this is a situation where hard to know where the Boilermakers are. They obviously competed well at Big Ten tournament, didn't get the job done, now face Yale on Friday. What's the vibe, at least from today's practice, and what you think as the Boilermakers head into the NCAA tournament?
Sorry, I'm just trying to get front lit here. I don't know. I mean, it's everybody's positive, obviously. They have every reason to be positive. I mean, it's, you know, Purdue's had a good season by any objective measure. I think, you know, this sort of, I don't know how vulnerable they are to pressure. The enormity of this event, the fact that their fan base has been having a collective panic attack for the better part of 3 months. I don't know, but I think they should have every reason to be confident. I mean, they've got the personnel, they've got the track record against non-Big Ten competition. They haven't lost a game this year. Okay, seems pretty loose, but I've never been to a practice where a team hasn't seemed loose. So, I can't read their minds. I think they're conscious of the fact that, you know, they have to take care of the basketball. And I think, you know, I don't know if anybody's ever articulated this other than Matt Painter, but I think Purdue's first obstacle in the NCAA tournament isn't whoever they have to play. It's Purdue. I mean, they have to take care of the basketball. That's the season. It cost you a regular season title. It cost you a conference tournament title, and it'll end your season here if you're not careful. So I think that's the most important thing by a mile of anything else that'll be discussed here in advance of, you know, Purdue playing Yale on Friday.
Why is there any reason to think the turnover issue is cured? It's going to improve?
No. other than the fact that, you know, Purdue's had good games where they've taken care of the basketball, but then it surfaces again. So I think it's the sort of thing that just kind of always sort of hangs over Purdue's head here. It can surface at any time. It's a matter of, you know, being aware of it. Purdue's aware of it. It still happens. Or if it does happen, you know, being that much better and winning anyway, you know, which is what happened in the regular season finale against Indiana. They did have one of those turnover spells. I can't remember exactly what the details were, but it was in the second half and it was like five turnovers in the span of eight or nine possessions, whatever it is. And that's why that game was as close as it was. But it cost Purdue three games this season. Again, as I said before, it cost you the regular season title, it cost you the conference tournament title. And if Purdue's not careful, it'll end their season. One would hope the urgency involved at this part of the season would, you know, be a safeguard against that. But Purdue had a championship on the line on Sunday, and it still happened. So I can't figure it out. If there's an answer to it, you know, hopefully for Purdue's sake, they figured it out, because it's a pretty dangerous landmine right now sitting in the dirt.
Well, you've talked about the fact it's not necessarily the number, though the number has been high. It's been the seven turnovers and 10 possessions. It's been the array, the onslaught of them at difficult times, like we saw Sunday against Iowa. Now, you play Yale, a team that don't know a lot about, 19-11. Was a little bit of a surprise team beating Princeton, a team that's been in the NCAA tournament, beat Baylor, I believe, in 2016. So this is a team that at least a coaching staff that knows how to win the NCAA tournament. But I think that's an interesting storyline for Purdue. It just has to, maybe in some ways, and maybe I'm overthinking this, but the fact that you're playing in Milwaukee instead of Indianapolis, and the fact that you're, you know, moved away of a place that everybody thought you were going to be, maybe Purdue will do better in anonymity and just play. I mean, is that overly simplified? Or, I mean, and you wrote out the nine things that are so the Boilermakers have to watch out for, but seems to me it just needs to do what it does best to have the best chance of moving on.
Well, Purdue's not going to be playing in anonymity. You're in the probably the strongest region of the tournament. You're still in the Big Ten footprint. So as long as you have an All-American and as long as you have a 7'4" guy, you're not anonymous. They're still going to get a lot of attention. They're still going to get a lot of scrutiny.
They're not in Indianapolis. I mean, yeah, I agree. Well, it was probably a poor choice of words. But
I'm not convinced that getting out of Indianapolis competitively isn't the most terrible thing in the world, because it's not like your fans can't come to Milwaukee.
Right.
It's just maybe if there's, you know, a little bit more of a kind of hunkering down kind of thing going on.
Right.
You know, you're playing in a new facility. There's that sort of newness. There's that sort of discomfort that can be a positive. What good did Indy do Purdue last year? And there were fans at those games. I don't think it's the end of the world that they're in Milwaukee. I don't think it's even a bad thing, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Brian, I'm gonna make the grand assumption Purdue's gonna beat Yale. Who do you fear most, Texas or Virginia Tech?
I would fear turnovers. I'm almost to the point where it doesn't matter who Purdue plays. It's really? Like if they don't turn the ball over, there's nobody they can't beat. If they do turn the ball over, there's nobody they can't lose to. I think it's really that simple. In terms of Virginia Tech or Texas, I wouldn't be afraid of either of them, to be honest with you. I know Virginia Tech's riding a bit of heater here. I know Purdue's track record with Chris Beard in the NCAA tournament is not positive. But Texas was they were a top five team in the preseason, and they're a sixth seed. They obviously have had some issues this year. They're a good defensive team. The one thing that would – I'd want to stay away from the great defensive teams as long as I could from a matchups perspective, but – if you want to get where you want to go here, you have to beat those teams eventually. And you may as well play one of them in the second round. Is Texas as good defensively as Texas Tech was a couple of years ago? I don't know.
No, they're not.
But I will also tell you that Purdue would have beaten that Texas Tech team had Isaac Haas not broken his elbow in the game prior. And that's how you counteract that style of defense that's really aggressive on the perimeter. And really interchangeable is you pound the ball inside and hopefully you get really high level efficiency from those guys. And I think that against Iowa, Purdue had a matchup where you really needed, 13 of 19 from Travion Williams and Zach Edey as opposed to 9 of 19. I think Purdue's matchup advantage has to be as acute as ever now. And I think those guys have to be at their most efficient of the season now. But I think that you're going to have to play a great defensive team anyway. And if Texas is that team in round two, I would say bring it on. Just don't turn the ball over. I think that, Purdue's played good defensive teams all year long. And, look at the body of work this season. When they don't turn the ball over, they're really good. When they do turn the ball over, with the exception of the Michigan game in Ann Arbor, which was a total malfunction. You could make a case, every other game Purdue lost this season was because of Purdue more than the opponent.
Yeah. You look at what, obviously there were some interesting developments that came up, obviously out of Indianapolis. Brandon Newman got a role and looks like it may be a role that will continue to the NCAA tournament. Rotations are important, obviously, and especially in a game we saw last year against North Texas, different situation. I understand, Matt Painter has decisions to make of who's hot, who he's going to play in certain situations. Sasha Stefanovic, using the example you used when writing that, got benched in the second half there, just using that as an example. But how, is rotation 10? Is it truly whatever it takes to be able to compete against and we'll say Yale, but then start with Texas and or Virginia Tech?
I don't think it's 10 because I think the backup four position is an either or type of deal, depending on matchups. I think that's going to be either Ethan Morton or Caleb first, but not both, depending on who the opponent is and how they match up, things like that. Other than that, I think you're looking at nine guys. Now that it seems like Brandon Newman's back in the mix here. But I also think that, you know, you dance with the girl that brung you, to quote Joe Tiller, at this stage of the season. I would anticipate Jaden Ivey not coming off the floor very much, foul trouble notwithstanding. I would anticipate Mason Gillis, you know, being out there as much as Purdue can have him out there. I would anticipate Sasha Stefanovic playing the sort of minutes that he's played all year long, you know, provided matchups don't preclude Purdue from using him normally. You don't bench the guys who got you this far at the end of the season unless you absolutely have to. So when people look at, you know, Sasha Stefanovic having a poor shooting game against Iowa and saying because Brandon Newman played well two games earlier, he should be out there more, it's just not what coaches do. I mean, if you can show me another coach somewhere who benches his stalwarts because they're struggling halfway through a game, that doesn't happen. That said, Brandon Newman played well. He was also 0-for-6 in the second game.
Right.
So the theory that you bench Sasha Stefanovic because he's not shooting well and you put this guy in because maybe he'd shoot better, that just doesn't make any sense to me. But maybe I'm shadow boxing with the court of public opinion here unnecessarily. but I think it's nine guys. But I think it could be like, depending on how games go, I think it could go down to like 6.5 or 7.5 when you factor in maybe some of your horses taking even more minutes.
Hey, yeah, Brian, we all know the importance of Ivy and Edie. And am I crazy to think this team's going to go as far as Stefanovic's shooting takes it?
I think it goes as far. If any one element matters most, I think it goes as far as Jaden Ivey's decision-making can take it. It would be great if Sasha Stefanovic could shoot really well. I mean, he's won games for Purdue before. He can win games for Purdue in the NCAA tournament. That's a big deal. Three-point shooting is a huge part of Purdue's mix. Stefanovic is a huge pillar of Purdue's offense, how they run it structurally, how it helps everyone else function, stuff like right. that. But I think the singular – you know, Jaden Ivey's going to have the ball in his hands almost every time down the floor, probably. And I think his decision-making probably looms largest over this team more than anything. That and the matchups. You know, Purdue plays big. A lot of other people play small. That's why Purdue got punted last year in the first round, is they couldn't match up to a smaller team that could spread the floor and shoot. So I think I would point to those things, and then I would point to Zach Edey and Travion Williams really being efficient against favorable matchups and staying out of foul trouble. And then probably somewhere along that list, I'd put Stefanovic's three-point shooting, but everybody's three-point shooting. Purdue, you know, has the capability to get really good looks from three-point range. And obviously, when they've been at their best this season, have been really efficient doing so.
Yeah, Yale is interesting only because maybe I have the skill to do it, but they are going to have a size. You know, they're not going to bring, I think their biggest player is 6'8". They will try to spread you out some. It sounds like, but may not have the skill set. But, you know, you look at Williams and Edey, 25 points and 25 rebounds against Iowa. That ought to be enough. But
Iowa's playing small, Purdue's playing big, and it's all about who leverages their matchup the best.
Yeah, right.
And when you have a matchup of, you know, Zach Edey and Travion Williams against a 6'8" guy to start the game and then against a small forward for the rest of the game, 9-19, you know, for two 60% shooters is not what you have in mind, especially when you take into account the fact that, you know, you're going to have to eat some turnovers when you play through the post as much as you do. You have to live through some foul shooting issues because you're as big as you are. Mm-hmm. You don't make one-and-ones. I mean, it's
– yeah. You missed, what, four of those against Iowa, right?
Those guys got 25 and 25 against Iowa, but that game set up for them to get 40 and 25. And Purdue just needs the 60% guys, you know, to be at a 60% level. 9-19, you know, isn't going to get it done. I'm not saying that those guys were the entirety of the issue for Purdue. Obviously, they contributed some of the turnovers, but not all of the turnovers. by any means, but I think I think Purdue needs those guys to be as efficient as possible around the basket.
Yeah. You said today, Brian, you thought, just from your observations, everything looked like everybody was loose, casual, felt good. Do you get the sense there's any pressure, that this team feels any pressure?
Nobody's going to say it. Nobody's going to exude it, but it would be human nature for them to not, you know, I mean, we've litigated this topic enough, but I mean, we've all been exposed.
It's like it's been a decade.
Well, we've all been exposed to we have litigated the whole topic of how everyone around them has been having a panic attack over this for 3 months now. And how can that not affect you? And if I were 19 years old and I was playing college basketball and people were talking about me on the internet all day long, I would be on there 24 hours a day and it would affect my mental state. And I'd be replying to those people, to be honest with you. I don't know how these guys don't, but it would be natural for that pressure to affect guys. That being said, I don't know if I saw any examples this year of Purdue not playing loose when they had to. Remember, that Wisconsin game was an elimination game for a Big Ten title. Mm-hmm. And I thought they played great in that game. I mean, great's probably overstating it a little bit, but they did everything they needed to do to win that game, except get a favorable bounce at the end of the game. You know, the Iowa game, whether those were the same stakes, I don't know, but that was the turnover issue that got you. I thought otherwise you played okay. I haven't seen this being a team that has really kind of buckled under any sort of pressure. If anything, they've played too loose at times, and I think they've played too casual. And I think that's been the difference between, you know, 27-7 and, you know, 30-4 or something like that. And both a Big Ten title and a Big Ten conference tournament title. I think they get too casual. I think you've also seen Purdue at times be better when they're behind in the second half. I mean, how many second halves were there in games both they won and they lost where they had to dig themselves out of a hole? You would have preferred they have not been in the hole in the first place, but nevertheless, all those games that came down to the wire, you know, Purdue had to come down from a dozen down or something like that at Wisconsin. Purdue had to play itself out of a hole at Rutgers only to get up pretty comfortably only to let it slip again. So Purdue's done okay this season, I guess, with its back to the wall. It doesn't have all the results to show for it would have preferred, but I haven't seen a lot of indicators of a team that's just going to go out there and choke either.
Yeah. Well, I think the effort level too, you talked about that even against Iowa, where, you know, it wasn't like they weren't giving good effort. They just, and they did dig that hole. They got themselves out of the hole. And then like you've been like a broken record, they made some key mistakes at the wrong time that cost them in that game as well. So all going to be a storyline we'll watch. Go ahead, Brian.
You just can't turn the ball over 7 times in 10 possessions. That's what, you know, I've been saying all year. It doesn't, like, if you have 14 turnovers for a game, fine. It can't be that situation where you just change the game in 2 minutes for the worse. And then all of a sudden you're reeling and you've given your opponent, you know, kind of wind behind its sails. If you just commit one every 2 minutes, you know, instead of, you know, bang, 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 bang. And all of a sudden you go from 5 up to 10 down. You know, it's just bad things seem to snowball on this team, whether it's the turnovers, whether it's the foul shooting, whether it's the bad bounces, whatever it might be. That's been kind of the story of the season to a certain extent. And again, I'm going to keep saying this, 27-7 objectively by any measure is a good season. So when we sit here and we talk about Purdue like they're 7-27, I think context really matters here. But Purdue's just, it's the turnovers. It's the only, I know somebody, I'll say this and somebody will reply, free throws, but turnovers are the only thing that matters. They are the only thing that has put Purdue in the position it's in right now, having not won a championship. It's their greatest fatal flaw. It's their greatest existential threat heading into the single elimination portion of the season. It's all that matters. If Purdue takes care of the ball, the sky is the limit. If Purdue does not take care of the ball, anything can happen. They could be out Friday night, for all we know. Yeah. Friday evening, well, Friday afternoon.
Friday afternoon.
Late Friday morning.
Friday by dinner time.
What time zone are you in?
Careful. 2 o'clock. Yeah, there have been, you know, the Clark Kellogg's and the Joe Lenardi's think they will be. Not necessarily, well, one I think picked them to lose early both before. And again, I think
people are looking at KenPom every day and they still see that number 100 next to their name in defensive efficiency. Mm-hmm. Right. And the people who aren't watching the games and are just looking at KenPom are sitting here thinking, oh, Purdue's terrible defensively. They can't beat anybody. They'll give up 100 points to Yale. It's not the defense. It is the turnovers. The defense, Purdue is never going to be a great defensive team. I'm not saying they are, but it is not their greatest problem right now. They have defended well for the last month. They defended well in the Big Ten tournament. They held Iowa to Iowa, one of the best offensive teams in college basketball, scored 110 points or whatever it was at Maryland, a couple of
112 in the tournament. Ago.
They scored 1,000 points against Northwestern, literally 1,000 points. They didn't have enough decimal places on the box score for all the points they scored on Northwestern. You take out 6 of those 17 turnovers, and you held Iowa to 65 points. You had to have Connor McCaffrey, who Purdue has been daring to shoot for 4 years, is the guy who beat you. Peyton Sanford is the guy who beat you. You did a good job against Keegan Murray. Again, you were good enough to hold Iowa to 60-something points. You were good enough to win that game. The most points you had given up prior to Iowa since the Michigan game was the 72 you gave up to Rutgers when you scored 84. So Purdue's doing okay defensively. It's, again, they're not the 80s Pistons. They're not going to lead the Big Ten in defense. They're not going to hold you to 50 probably. But they're not going to give you 100 either at this point. There's still some things in terms of matchups. Purdue's playing big. Everybody else plays small. Ball screen defense is always going to be a problem as long as you're playing a Redwood at center. But the people at a national level who are looking at Purdue and just looking at that KenPom defensive ranking, they're not looking at the full story. They're not watching the games. They're not grasping the context behind that number.
Yeah, they haven't watched them play. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, I agree with that. I think it is a narrative that's being spread around by the Jay Billises and others of the world.
But it's also understandable because
– Yeah, it's a number.
I rely on statistics too. I'm going to look at Yale's metrics and say, okay, Yale's good at this, Yale's not good at this. I'm not saying these guys should be expected to watch every minute of Purdue's game. I'm just – trying to add context to what people are going to hear about Purdue here in the next couple of weeks and why some people might be saying, you know, Purdue might get upset by Yale on Friday night.
No,
I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen.
I'll go on a limb. You never know. I mean, if you
take care of the ball, you can beat anybody in the country. If you turn the ball over, you can lose to anybody in the country. That's kind of the nature of this roller coaster of a team.
Okay, as we bring this to an end here, one thing we talked about, and Brian, you mentioned a couple of things you've written about, not really overthinking the draw. And, I still would argue, again, Purdue has to beat the teams. It's in front of them. The fact that they would play Kentucky, and if they can get that far to Sweet 16, you're going to have to get through teams like Kentucky. I think Purdue, I'm maybe in the minority, thought Purdue had a good draw because I just don't think Baylor is at the level at this point in time of the final four or the other number one seat. And it's just going to be, and I know there's some discrepancy there. Any Tom and or Brian, any other thoughts on that? Or any, now a couple of days into that, anything else that jumps off the page? Again, it is what it is. And Brian, you've said, well, Purdue just has to beat the team. It's going to have to beat Texas or Virginia Tech in game two if it gets through Yale. That's the simple fact.
Yeah, hats off to Brian and his yeoman's work. I read it and listen to the podcast, and he's got to be talked and analyzed out here. Finally get to some more basketball here soon. But, I guess I'm a guy real quick. I'm a guy who thinks seeds are overrated. I mean, some people think you're going to tiptoe your way to the Final Four. You're going to have to beat good teams. And And if Purdue, if you talked about it, Alan, they could be staring down Kentucky and staring down Baylor. So, and as Brian noted, this is a Purdue team that can beat anybody, but right. you can also, as we've seen, look awfully pedestrian and possibly get beat by anybody. Obviously, too, the elite teams could, but still, it's right there for Purdue. We all know it. And who knows? Like I said, maybe there's a sense of relief. I know Brian doesn't want to overstate this, but he's mentioned that maybe getting out of Big Ten play helps. We'll see. But again, that's not the be-all, end-all. But who knows? Change of venue. I think it's good getting out of Indianapolis. Get away. There'll still be Purdue fans there. I get it. But just get away. You're a number three seed. You're a little under the radar. In some ways, some of the pressure's off, I think. I mean, I know there's still pressure. All these fans want the Final Four. But at this point, you know, everybody's talking about, of course, Kentucky, Gonzaga, all those other teams. Mike Krzyzewski is going to be a huge story, too. So then there's Purdue. They're on the radar, obviously, but and not like they're a number one seed coming off a regular season, a conference tournament title. So who knows? I guess I don't know what I'm saying, but I'm just glad we're ready to play some basketball here. It's a great event, and I've got a lot of good memories from this over the years, and hopefully all the fans can have some more here too.
Well, I would agree. From a national level, it's very popular to write Purdue off to some extent if you read some of the pundits. And again, that is what it is. But Brian, your last word as we bring this to a close. You're done.
Injury.
I think I see Jeff Brom back there in the corner.
I'm just trying to get front lit. What are my final words?
Final thoughts. Final answer.
You're done analyzing. Let's play.
Do you want to use a lifeline?
Yeah.
I did such an awful job covering the Big Ten tournament because that first 9 p.m. game just killed me. And I'm looking forward to getting some rest starting over again.
Yeah, you had a 2 o'clock, and you probably have an early game Sunday, too, or earlier game Sunday, I would think.
Well, earlier or later because of Krzyzewski.
Oh, God.
They'll put Krzyzewski in primetime.
Yeah.
And Krzyzewski's in Milwaukee, right?
I don't know.
What are you saying? No, I haven't looked. I mean, you're saying.
No, I'm saying yeah, Purdue's not going
to
get.
I mean, it's just hard to know. It is. It's almost impossible to know how they're going to slot Sunday's games. I mean, would they would have a, and obviously it's a central time zone too. Not that that matters a lot, but yeah, we'll wait and find out. One thing at a time, man. But you will have an earlier night on Friday night. That's a good thing. So I'm glad for you from that standpoint. You've been put through the ringer here the last few weeks, to say the least. So
get yourself a can of Schlitz.
Yeah,
yeah. Is that what they make
there? Do it up there. Yeah. Schlitz.
All I know Milwaukee, about Milwaukee is it's the only major American Milwaukee city light. To have ever elected three socialist mayors.
There you go. I think it's on their sign as you drive in, right?
So. That is one of the funniest scenes ever in movie history, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know how I got a phone call here in the middle of this, but all right, guys. Forward to that.
Safe travels, Brian.
If Purdue makes it next week, we'll probably have our Saturday simulcast on Monday or Tuesday of next week as well as we prepare for the regional where Purdue, if Purdue can advance, they'll be headed to Philadelphia. And that will be a, but again, it is the proverbial one step at a time, and we'll stay tuned on all that front. So guys, thanks so much. We'll look forward to your coverage, Brian, from Milwaukee, and we'll have all that and more in the next coming days on goldenblack.com. Thanks again to the Union Club Hotel for its sponsorship, the 811 restaurant, and the Boiler Up Bar. We appreciate all they do for us as well. So we'll see you probably a week from today as we look at the next step in our Saturday simulcast. Thanks to all of you for watching and listening. Mm-hmm.